Welcome to another episode of Million Dollar Stories, where we get to interview authors from all over the world. You know, I love talking to authors who have the courage to take their thoughts, put it down on a piece of paper, and share it with the world, because they will end up changing their legacy and potential destiny, and maybe the world in the process. If you're out there and you want to write a book, check out dreamstarterspublishing.com. We can help you out with wherever you're at in the process. And if you have a book and you want to put the book on autopilot to generate leads for you, check out bookmarketingcrm.com. You know, this next guest is an expert in a field that I really was not into growing up. My first success, I guess you could say, as an entrepreneur was I was a landlord. I bought a 4-unit building after reading Rich Dad Poor Dad. I became a landlord, and what I hated most was collecting rents and fixing toilets and fixing roofs. And then I realized, well, there are people out there who can do this for me. And I started to do a lot of startups and got out of real estate. Now I am into self-storage, but there are people out there that do an incredible job when it comes to property management, and there's a lot of money in it. So that's why if you're out there and you're an everyday entrepreneur looking to start or grow a business, this might be the one for you. The book that we're talking about is called A 7-Step Blueprint to Passive Wealth, Property Management Made Simple. And we have the author with us today, Rob Chang. Thanks so much for being here, sir.
So happy to be here, Mike. And glad to speak with your audience and definitely educate them, maybe provide some insights and some things, demystify some things they think about property managers.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people look at it and say, oh my God, that's an insane amount of work, but maybe there's no way to systematize it from doing it all across the world or across the United States. And I've met some property managers. They are in every part of the United States. I'm just blown away. But once you get it dialed in one area, you can take it and just pretty much put it everywhere. So demystify, I think that's a great word. Hopefully you could do that for our guest today. And so what made you want to write this book? Let's start off with that.
I think the main thing is my dad, he taught me the business and he always wanted to write a memoir, but he really never got around to it for some reason. I mean, he just always wanted to do it. And, you know, this is kind of his legacy through me. I want to teach everybody the lessons he taught me, because he's a first generation millionaire, and I make my own millions too. Like, I haven't inherited a dime. Okay. Cause my parents are still alive, but, you know, but, these are his lessons, and because everybody came to him. I mean, his story is kind of amazing. He was first one immigrated here from Taiwan. He came here as a perfectly legitimate immigrant to the University of Colorado as a student. And he ended up, bringing his whole family over. He became a success here, and he brought his whole family over from Taiwan to the United States. All the relatives that wanted to come came to the States, and he was kind of like that figure, you know, that
he's the one
figure in the family. Yeah, he's the one that changed the trajectory of the family. So I want to pass that skill set on to whoever was interested in learning that. That's why I wrote the book.
It's amazing. Now, was he a real estate guru? Did he get into it and then he became a property manager, or was it something that he learned the hard way and then started doing it himself? How did it all come to be?
So as far as the PM niche, he only managed properties that he owned. He didn't do the jobs for any third parties except for one-off time, like a family friend, but he never got a real estate broker's license. And he never got a contractor's license like I did. He just wanted to do it for the investment part and retire as soon as possible.
Does he still work?
No, he's 89 and he has dementia. So he's kind of in an old folks home now.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So that's kind of my, that's the emotional side. I just wanted to get the lessons out, because we want to leave a legacy while our loved ones are alive, and when also when we're gone. We don't want to have to worry about leaving them money, but also leaving them skill sets and tools and knowledge and resources. That makes sense.
Absolutely. And so we know a little bit about your dad, which commendable, absolutely incredible. So what about you? Did you just grow up watching your dad work his ass off and you just learned by proxy, or tell us a little bit about your journey?
So my journey as a kid, I started doing like the books and accounting when I was 16. That was my first paycheck. And then I started learning with my uncle Ken. I learned how to do handyman work. Getting grimy with the termites and the plumbing leaks and stuff like that. No mask, no gloves. I'm just like a kid in my, sweatpants, just like totally clueless learning the construction trade, right? And so I learned construction that way. Fast forward to after college, I became a commercial real estate broker agent with Marcus & Millichap. I was there for about 3 years. Brokering like retail deals and apartment deals. And I totally shunned away from property management at that time. Because I was like, oh, that's a dirty job. I don't want to do that again. I want to come in with my suit on and my tie and be clean and pretty and just talk to, clients all day. That's what I want to do. I want to be like, living the high life, right?
You watched Wall Street when you were growing up. You're like, wait a second. I just want to wear a suit and have a nice office and date the pretty girls. Done. That's it, huh?
Exactly. So I didn't have the full picture. I was just kind of like a brash, 23-year-old, like very arrogant and thought I knew it all. But my dad was like, oh, you're a greenhorn. You're a greenhorn. Every day I'm like, why do you keep calling me greenhorn? What the hell, man? Because I didn't know anything. I just had a license. Didn't mean anything. Like a driver's license doesn't mean you're a race car driver.
Yeah.
So after I got I was a broker for about 4 years there, and then 1 year was when the mortgage collapsed, the mortgage industry collapsed, and that was my excuse. I didn't make a single sale for 1 year, so I didn't get a paycheck for 1 year because I was full commission schedule. And I told my wife, I said, hey, I think I'm gonna quit. I think I can't do the agent thing anymore. And she said, oh, okay, well, what's next? And I go, flipping houses. Let's go flip houses. And she was like, you have zero experience doing this, so please convince me first. I convinced her to have some faith. Houses around San Jose was like 150 to 200 each, 200,000 each at that time, which is crazy cheap. And then she said, yeah, let's do it. What the hell? Let's try it. So we all invested our life savings, and we flipped four houses, and three out of four made a profit. One broke even, and from there on, we kept flipping properties. And then so many people were asking me, hey, this property is so beautiful inside. Who did the remodeling, right? And it was partially me and partially some other handyman, because I was super cheap. I was hiring like the guys you just pick up in front of Home Depot, because I wanted to save money. I didn't know any other way. I was just like, all right, save money, do it cheap, make a profit, get out. So I did that. And eventually they said, well, so many people said, I want you to fix my house just like this. And I just kept saying, no, I don't do that. I don't do that. I'm not a contractor. Like, I don't do that. Until one day I said, well, maybe I should do that. So I got my contractor's license as a result of flipping all those homes. And then I just did full-time contracting for about 8 years. I did it from 2010 to 2018. I was a full-time contractor. I mean, full-blown with the truck, with the ladder, rack, picking up sheets of plywood at the hardware store. That was me. Changing out toilets. That was me. Okay. I was like remodeling houses, building houses, projects, blueprints, everything. I was doing that full time. No real estate deals, no property management, none of that.
Wow.
I was fully cut off from that industry. So here's how it came back full circle. Is I did a job for a super nice lady who has since passed away, and I work for her kids now. She called me from a Craigslist ad and said, well, I'd like you to come do a job for me at my apartment complex. I said, great. I was there. It was a really small job, and she was happy. And she says, hey, I see on your business card you still have a real estate license, because I never let it expire. And she said, yeah, I'd like you to come over to my house. I want to talk to you. I go, okay, I don't know what this is about, but okay, sure. I'm just rolling with it, right? Kind of serendipity. So I met her and her husband. We sat down for a little bit, and she said, well, I'd like you to be a maintenance manager at that complex that you did that job for me at. I didn't know that whole thing was like a job interview. She was just like testing me each step of the way. I said, what does that mean? What is a maintenance manager? I'm not going to live there. So what does that mean? She just said, well, I just want you to manage all the vendors that do work at the property. And if you need to do work yourself, you just bill me for it. I said, huh. I don't know if I'm into that, but you know what? I give it a shot. And if it's not a fit, let's just break off. She said, that's fine. And that worked out. That was my first 18 units I ever managed as a maintenance manager. That turned into me being the property manager. And then that turned into me managing the neighbor's properties. And then that turned into me basically managing 400 doors now and accumulating all this wealth and flipping, you know, apartment, turning to flip from flipping homes. I started flipping apartment buildings instead. So that's my full circle story.
Wow. All righty. So like you said, there's a lot of serendipity, but you did strike when the iron was hot. I mean, you did go after the opportunities whenever they were presented. So it's not just they just didn't just fall into your lap. You freaking took action, which it's amazing. So the question that people always ask is, and I think you answer it in chapter one, how can property management be the key to financial freedom? I think that's a lot of work, but it's a necessity. And the people that I hang around, they're always, always either going through property managers or, you know, preaching about the importance of having a solid property manager. So it's absolutely crucial. And once you get it dialed in, then it's pretty much you can write your own ticket. So tell us about chapter one.
So I think if I can put this concept out there is that each apartment building is its own business. And the property management is the management. Okay. So it's like every company that gets sold, right? Like Kodak, all these extinct companies, it's because not because the business is bad, it's because the management was bad. They refused to innovate. They refused to get with the times, and so they faded out of relevance. So property management is the same. For example, if a property management company refuses to raise the rents, or they refuse to get better vendors or more efficient materials, they're going to fall out of relevance with the market. And that is going to take them to be a less valuable asset, which is why so many of my clients, they come in to a property that's so mismanaged and they instantly see the value that they can put into the building because they know, oh, shoot, they're $800 below market rent on the three bedrooms. And they didn't even know they can install a dishwasher here. They didn't even know they can install a washer and dryer in the closet. Like they didn't even know they could close off the patio. Are they lazy or are they ignorant or what are they? Who knows? But it's my opportunity, right? So property management itself, owning a property management business is number one is guaranteed income. You know what you're going to make next month and the month after that. Okay. It's predictable. That's why it's easier than being a real estate broker. It's easier than being a real estate investor. Honestly, I'm all three and I'm more than that. I have a lot of horses running. I'm an influencer on TikTok. I'm all sorts of passive wealth streams going on. Okay. I built that up over time. I'm also a speaker and a coach. These all built up. It's all synergistic activities. But if I'm like a contractor, like I just explained my journey, my accidental journey to becoming a property management company owner is that a contractor can latch on to a real estate broker and they can partner up. You don't have to be a one-man band. If you're lacking a skill that you're needing in the PM business, just go get somebody with that skill. Like, and there are so many ways you can third party this thing too. I'm on the trade show circuit for all the property management right now. I'm doing a show in Philly. I do five shows this year. I'm doing a show in National Apartment Association show. Next month, I'm at Santa Clara Convention Center in about 3 weeks, doing another show. And the amount of tools and tech that are available to people are absolutely amazing. So that's why I think the PM business has a black eye, because you think it's, oh, you're just like a dirty plumber, and like, I don't want to be doing that, which is what I thought when I was 23 years old. But the money is very green.
Did you say you're doing a show in Philly, Philadelphia?
Yeah.
And where are you located?
That's going to be a National Apartment Association show, June 19th to 21st.
And where are you located right now? Where are you doing this Zoom call from?
San Francisco, California.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So you're all over. Now, are you able to help people? Obviously, you're doing a show there. Are you doing a show to offer your services to anybody in Philadelphia?
So some shows are purely for education. Like, they absolutely no way you can sell your services officially unless you have a booth in the exhibit salon, right? So some of the shows I do offer services. Some people come up to me after my session and demand my services, even if I never offer them, like the last one in Napa. So I did a show in Napa last month. And I did a show in Atlanta last September. That's for National Association of Real Estate Residential Property Managers. So I'm on the NARPM circuit. I'm on the Cal-NARPM circuit. I'm on the NAA circuit. I'm on the AOA circuit. So I'm not just here. I'm here to educate people. I have, out of the goodness of my heart, because I want to pay it forward. Like, I'm already wealthy. I don't need a lot more money, please. I don't. I'm already making it. What makes me happy is seeing other people make it that haven't done it before.
It's great. You're completing the hero's journey, right? Now you're in stage three, where it's the wealth through servitude. You're serving others, helping them to acquire what you acquired, which is awesome, man. And so give us some metrics here. 400 units you're managing across how many states?
No, this is just local. I'm only doing the Bay Area.
Wow. Amazing. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so when you are able to, it seems like you said you help people in Napa, and you turn people down all the time then, huh?
It has to be a good fit. Like, I'm kind of intense. If I'm going to be your coach, I'm pretty intense and demanding. That's just my style, okay? There's all different styles of archetypes. That's my style. I'm like, I'm a little bit of drill sergeant and a little bit of preacher. Like, that's my style. So...
You don't fit with everybody, but the ones who match up with you, you're looking for results. And so when you coach people now to do what you did, is there a time frame you would expect for them to go from zero to X amount of units to manage? Or is there anything that you could relay to our audience?
As far as I don't have an unbelievable guarantee, because every person is coming from a different place of origin, but I do have a starting point that I require is that they have to own at least one rental property if they're going to be my investor client, or they have to at least be already managing properties professionally.
Got it.
I don't teach the newbies.
Yeah, they have to have some skin in the game, like you said. They Correct. Have to have a property, which will change your perspective on everything.
Definitely.
And so I'm looking at this, and it looks like You outline the details pretty much to the single ingredients that you need. It's not just fluff in this book. Talk about the qualifications, what you need, the ecosphere of owners, clients, managers, vendors. What do owners all have in common? So, like, I would assume that do you love what you do? Do you love doing the repairs and doing the fixing? I mean, I would assume that's part of it, but maybe you don't love it. You just love the aspect of, you know, giving a nice, safe place to live for people and keeping them happy. So maybe that's one aspect. But do you love what you do with that fixing aspect?
I think the transformation is a big part of, getting fulfillment, because you take the asset in its current state and you create it to the future state, right? That transformation is what is so fulfilling. It's like you improve the property, and then you improve the tenant's quality of life, and you improve the owner's net worth, and you improve your own, honestly, you got to be honest, you improve your own fee too, right? Because you get a percentage of the rent's higher.
Yep.
So you, and then you improve your employees' lives. Everything is improved if you're doing your job well. And we're just applicating that to the property management niche.
And so for people who are not in this space, how do property managers get paid? You just bring up a very good point that you are paid a percentage of the rental income, right? So an owner gives you pretty much carte blanche to take care of the property, take care of the problems. But also, if there's a vacancy, it's up to you, the property manager, to fill it. And so you have systems and processes in place that are proven, tried, and true. So the better you get at your job, the more consistent that income is, but also the higher the I guess you could say the cash flow per month, right?
Yes. So there's vacancies. It's like a double-edged sword because you're collecting less management fees, but then you get a bigger leasing fee, right? Ideally, there'd be no vacancies, but that's not reality, right? There's always going to be some vacancies. We hover between 2 to 5% a month, just depends on the economy. When times are good in the Bay Area, it's like 1% vacancy, and you can pre-fill them before they even see the unit physically. It's kind of crazy. You can rent them just showing YouTube videos, but I don't want to go off on a tangent too much. So the management fee is basically on a sliding scale from 4% to 10% of gross collected rents. And the leasing fee is generally between $1,000 per unit and 1 month's rent. It just varies because each portfolio size is different. Obviously, the larger portfolio size are going to get a smaller fee, right? That's just how it is. And then some contracts are purely leasing. So that's why the leasing fees are going to go up to 1 month's rent. So it's a give and take. It's kind of like there's no one size fits all for fees. Because if a fourplex owner comes to us and says, okay, I want you to manage our property. We have our minimums. We have our fee floors because we cannot set up a property and go through all this admin without getting our floor, simply because our minimum starter pack is an owner with 20 doors. That's our minimum here in the Bay Area, just personally. Because we know that the owner that owns 20 units or more, we're going to be thinking the same way.
Yes.
Like the homeowner, I'll give you an example, okay? The homeowner that never bought that house, that inherited that house, they're going to think way differently than the person who worked their way up to 100 doors and grinded their way and flipped every property. Like, we're going to be understanding each other. We're on the same wave, like 1,000%. But that other way of thinking from inheriting a house, they're going to be a little bit tougher to deal with, let's just say.
Yeah, it's a great way to put it too, because who you become in that process is going to make it either, you know, you're able to hold a conversation, you're able to understand both of each other's objectives and maybe the problems that each other can solve. But you are going after, I'm glad you bring this up, because I was going to ask you, what is the unit number that you're looking for someone to own? Let's just say that an owner comes to you. It has to be at least 20 because, number one, they have the profit margin there, and yes, they're at a certain level of acumen and yes, and skill set. So 20, like I had a 4-unit. It didn't make sense to get a property manager because they would take my profit. I wouldn't do it. But once I would start to evolve and get a little bit bigger, I would hire a property manager. So you're not looking for the 4 units or the duplexes. You're looking for multifamily, probably 20 and above. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. We're looking at a bunch of portfolios right now, like 75 to 100 units to 200 units. I mean, that's our ideal client in the Bay Area. Anything outside of the Bay Area, we can set up shop. It just would take more lead time. Instead of 30 days setup, it's probably going to take 60 days. And we would only do that if it's one cohesive complex so that we can put our own resident manager in there.
Man, there is something to be said about finding a property manager. It's like your power team, right? Once you have a property manager you can rely upon, you can scale, you can grow. And I'm assuming you become, and obviously you're an owner also, but you become a partner that is a part of many, many ventures if you do this right.
Yeah, property management. Some of the owners that's funny, like one of my clients, he's about 75, 80 years old now. When I was just coming out of college, he was supposed to be my mentor as a realtor because he's a successful realtor here. I was supposed to go under his wing as a residential realtor, but I politely declined and decided to go off as a commercial real estate broker. And he's now my client. The guy, he's now like things have come full circle. He's now my client. And one of the agents at Marcus & Millichap, God rest his soul, Ed Cerny, he passed away last year. He would teach us every Monday morning at the sales meeting. I ended up buying a property from him like 2 years ago. And it's just like, I don't know, sometimes you just gotta think that you're really blessed because you just see the full circle coming together to buy a property from your mentor and then to also have your mentor as your client now. It's kind of what have I done right in this world? I don't know. I need to pay this forward, basically.
That's a great way to look at it too, man. Like you said, you see your transformation and you ask yourself sometimes, like, how the hell did it all come to be? This is amazing.
Yeah, because I was a total idiot, so I don't know how it worked.
Guys, his book, it outlines pretty much everything you need, even 10 ways to keep your tenants happy. But when it comes to wealth creation, you talk about passive income, and obviously there's ways to make it passively, but your philosophy when it comes to money, I talked about Rich Dad Poor Dad before and how it changed my life. It got me into real estate, got me on the path of becoming an entrepreneur. How do you look at money? Do you now take this passive income and continually invest it in assets that produce more cash flow? Or is there a point where you're starting to look outside of real estate just to diversify your portfolio? So what's your strategy?
So I look at money as a tool. What can it do for you and your family? It's not something I take, fill my bathtub up with cash and take Instagram pictures with it. I don't do any of that crap. Like money is a tool. It can help people. We donate to our favorite charities. I mean, it can actually help people, free people, kids from slavery. So money can do a lot of fantastic things. It can also do a lot of bad things, or you don't like to focus on those, right? It can create generational wealth. I think the thing about money is that, sorry, my Alexa's plugged in. The thing about money is that you want to create cash flow, not just equity. So when you're in the real estate game, the key is cash flow, like Kiyosaki's cash flow quadrant game. I mean, that book changed my life too. I read all the sub books too by Kim Jones. I just went full tilt by every single book that exists,
Yeah.
and every single one, and their CPA Ken, everybody. I'm gonna read them all. Just gonna absorb it all. So I'm with you on that. Like money, it all comes down to preserving your equity. The final goal in real estate should always be to preserve all your equity while growing it, while cash flowing. Okay, but in the Bay Area, it's a little bit of a different process because the price is so damn high. Price is so damn high to enter. So one of the highest in the nation. Like the average house is like 1.5. So that's probably going to be your first property is a rental home, a one unit. That's probably going to be your first. So that's what we did. First house, a dumpy little house on the back of an expressway. We were cash flowing negative every month, 2,000.
Yeah. That's
But
usually
we
what
were
you do
still,
in your first property, right? That's how it
yeah,
goes.
but we're in the game though. I'm like, put me in the game, coach. I'm in. Come on, put me in the fifth quarter. I'm in. Be
What
some
you
time, you know?
learn, from that first property, you might be able to exponentially increase your chances of success in the second one, right? Because you become a whole new version of how you buy, how you manage, how you solve problems. So it's the first one that might be the strike, but the second one might be the win.
Yeah, absolutely. The first property changes you from a homeowner's mentality to an investor. You like there's so many, oh my gosh, so many people make the mistake being a first-time investor and going into the property and saying, I'm going to fix the property exactly like the way I love it because I want to do it exactly like I was going to live there.
That was me.
That was me too. That's the only property I didn't make profit on.
Your emotions, once they're tied to it, you're screwed. It's the way I look at it.
It was like you're going to make a mistake. You have to learn with your wallet. And then when it hurts, then you don't do it again, right? Then you start saying, okay, any color will do. Yeah, yeah. Any color cabinet is fine. Any color paint is fine. Just don't be orange or good, right?
As long as it's white. I always heard that from people. You can paint it whatever color you want as long as it's white. That's it, right? So keep it simple. And usually when you get into this game, I guess, they're buying the same products, same countertops, and they can start to do it over and over. These are the house flippers, but it's probably the same philosophy to keep it simple, keep it basic, and therefore you're not tied to it emotionally and you can make rational decisions.
Yeah, in the apartments that we turn, we do Swiss coffee paint, eggshell, everywhere. That's it. That's my whole paint order on the doors, on the baseboard, on the walls, on the ceiling, in the bathroom, in the kitchen, in the bedrooms. Period. Eggshell. Done. You know why?
Because you can get the best price for that, right? All in one order. Keep it simple. It's all right in one spot. Everything is under a... You can't mess it up that way, right?
Yep. No masking tape. No plastic. No two zones. No two sheens. And touch-up is guaranteed to work. Touch-up paint. So when they vacate and they scratched everything around the light,
touch up paint.
Touch up and you're done. You don't have to guess like, was this flat? Oh, did the painter like mix the rollers when he went from flat to semi-gloss? Is that where there's this like half shiny, half flat section? You know what I mean? Like, I've seen so much crap over the years. Like, we just settle on like one sheen, boom. Because they spray and they're done. So the painters love it. We love it. And it's easy. That's just one pro tip right there.
So, and by the way, guys, take that because I've been in many real estate circles and they say something very similar to that. So that's huge. So people out there who are looking to get into this space, I would assume one thing that they need potentially is a contractor's license. I may be wrong about that, but it depends probably on the area. San Francisco, you might need to show pretty much everything about your life, or the capitalism I thought was outlawed in San Francisco. I don't know, but tell me a little bit about what people might need to get started in this world. And then we could talk a little bit about something else in regards to a book that you might recommend. So,
yeah. So the only thing you need to get started in most states is a real estate broker's license. You don't need a contractor's license. Like, it's pretty rare here to have a contractor's license in-house. That's kind of our competitive edge because we're able to get repairs done quickly and efficiently with, that home building experience that a lot of property managers honestly are, I won't say clueless. What's next to clueless?
I would say lost. I would say,
uninformed.
Yeah,
I said inexperienced. How's that? Because if you've never
a clean way of saying it.
Because if let's say you have a plumbing job and there's a leak, right? Tenant only says there's a leak on the work order, and that's all you get. And so let's say you're a property manager and you just have a real estate broker's license. You have no remodeling experience. You're just gonna send it off to the plumber, right? Joe the plumber is gonna come and say, "All right, we need to rip out the wall and put a new plumbing valve in." You're going to say, "Cool, let's do it." You're going to say, "Are there any option two or three?" And he's going to send you a bill for $3,000, right? And you're going to pass it to the owner and they're going to be like, "Oh, hey, I'm just looking over the report. What happened in unit 6? And they say, "Oh, there was a leak." "What kind of leak?" "Oh, I didn't read the details. Oh, the shower head was dripping, you know, whatever." "Oh, you could have changed the gasket, $5, you know. Did you think about doing that? Did you ask them to try it first?" "Oh, no, I didn't." "Well, what if that's your property that you actually own out of state or something like that, and you hired a PM? Like, that's money in your pocket, you know?"
Yeah.
And if you do that too many times, they think you're in cahoots with the plumber. They think you're getting kickbacks from the plumber. I heard this kind of chatter all the time. If you charge too much, they assume you're cheating with the contractor. You know what I'm saying? So that's why on another level, we charge zero markup on materials and vendors. And our clients are like, wow, that's different. We love it. We don't charge anything.
Transparent and real. I mean, this is, that probably gets you a lot further, that trust you build up with them through that.
We don't charge any postage fees. We don't charge any supervisor to go supervise the vendor fees. We don't charge, holy crap. I've seen some statements where there's the management fee is like $900 a month. And the extra fees added up to like 1500 extra. They found a way. Like, oh, copier charge, postage charge, advertising charge, on-site supervisor charge, this many hours. I was like, what the heck? Bleeding the property dry, you know? The management company is making three times more than the owner. I was like, this is not right, man. This is not right.
You probably have all kinds of data, or you've seen it, that many owners swap out property managers every year, every 2 years. I just think that there's an attrition rate out there that's pretty high. Am I right? Is it safe to say that property managers, good property management companies, are pretty tough to find?
I think there's it's probably a common assumption. I don't know too much about other property management companies other than we take over their complexes pretty often. And I don't know. I mean, there's always room for improvement, our company included. And that's why I'm coaching people out there, because you need property management. Like, we're essential workers. We never shut down during COVID. It's just like, it's the job that nobody really wants to do. It's not glamorous. But it's necessary,
man. And I think that no matter how good AI gets, this is an industry that will always be there. And if you get into the trades, even this is you can write your own ticket. Prices are only going to go up. You're becoming more valuable as time goes on, and this is a very safe industry. So I meet a lot of people in real estate. There's not too many people out there coaching individuals on how to create a property management company. That's why I was so blown away by this book. And I'm fascinated with it. So outside of your own book, is there another one that you recommend to our audience? Maybe it has to do with Rich Dad, Poor Dad, or something that you recommend when it comes to either building wealth, becoming free financially, or just property management in general.
Oh, gosh, there's so many property management books. But I would say, just as an economics major graduate, Ray Dalio's books.
Yeah.
Because as a broad principle, he's absolutely brilliant. It teaches you not to ever quit on the path. Like, his principle is like, okay, your path upward is a pig's tail connected to another pig's tail to another one. But it's going uphill. You're going to have all these setbacks, because we all do. Life happens, you know, death, divorce, whatever happens. Businesses go down. Your employer might shut down. The economy might be bad. Those are the setbacks. But our mentality keeps us pushing forward and keeps us positive to where we're actually going to get to the goal we imagined or we dreamed of. But we had no, like, the plan that we set forth, it's probably not going to be the path that we end up going on, because it's like a jungle out there, right? We're like jumping out of the way of these tigers and these lions, but we ended up down a dark cave, but then we ended up in paradise anyways. Yeah. I love Ray Dalio's books. I mean, about economy and how to just keep trucking.
Yeah, I think it's Principles. Is that the one that's the big one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the most famous one, yeah.
Man, and one of my clients always calls those happy accidents God moments, right? Or God math, the way it looks like. You can be as precise as you want, but certain things are going to come up, and things that you're thinking of right now, I mean, something may come into your life that's even way, way, way better, very much like with what happened to you. So I'm a total agreement that you just never know, but as long as you keep going and pushing forward, good things happen. And if you become more clear-minded, usually opportunities come your way, very much like that, how that woman was testing you out of how well you handled problems, how fun you were to work with, and how easy you were to work with. So you passed the tests. Guys, his book is called The 7-Step Blueprint. Let me pull this up. 7-Step Blueprint to Passive Wealth. And it's The Property Management Made Simple. So There is a TikTok account you have on our notes here. Are you a TikToker then? Is that where you spend most of your time? Is that the easiest way to get in touch with you?
It is. That's part of my windy path from Ray Dalio. I never expected to be on there. I never did. I still can't believe it. So Facebook wasn't catching on. Instagram wasn't catching on. YouTube wasn't catching on for me, just for my format, whatever my recipe was. But TikTok, yeah, I gone viral twice. And I've become a micro influencer on there. I got 12,000 followers. So I've been doing TikTok every day for the last 5 months. And actually, I'm making good money off of it.
Jeez.
That's and one of my hustles now.
I believe your handle is at propertymanagement_RC, right?
Yes.
So I'm going to follow you right now. I haven't been following you, but I got to check this out. So in addition to that, is there a website for the coaching program? If anybody's out there watching this or listening to this, what's the best way to find more information about this coaching program?
They can go to robchang.com, CHIANG.com.
Cool. All right, guys.
Obviously, and we can do a free strategy session if it's a fit.
If you're out there and you're thinking, man, I can't wait to start doing videos of me in my bathtub with money, he's not your guy. But when it comes to property management and doing it the right way, he definitely is. So, Rob Chang, I have to say, this has been fun to talk with you. We could probably talk for hours in regards to some nightmare stories, some really positive stories, but also Robert Kiyosaki. I could talk for days about him. So thanks so much for being here, man.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. Yeah.
And I'm in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You're not too far off in Philadelphia for this event. When you come to Pittsburgh, you let me know, okay?
All right, sweet. Go Phillies.
go what? Go what?
Go Phillies.
Oh, no. Go Pirates or go
Pirates?
Penguins. Penguins are out of the playoffs, so you can't even say that anymore.
They can't win every year. Come on.
Yeah, we got Sidney Crosby. We're good for a while. Anyways, remember, guys, a $1 million book will lead to a $1 million life right on.